There were no ants in the Waldorf Astoria's basement. If there had been any to begin with, Hank had spent enough time down here playing with chemicals to drive them away. It felt strange to wear the helmet and have nothing to talk to. He missed them, sometimes. They weren't just tools. Ants had a social order, a society as complex as anything humans had come up with. They had divisions of labor, could problem solve, could communicate with one another, even teach one another. People thought social insects were hive minds, like the Borg, but they were anything but. They might be so heavily interdependent on one another that they couldn't survive outside the colony, but they were all individuals. Very organized individuals, who all knew their place in the world with utmost certainty, and were willing to give him a place there, too, whenever he had the helmet on. No one but Scott Lang had ever really understood the appeal of that. Most people looked at Hank strangely when he tried to explain. He'd built the Ant-Man helmet to talk to them, initially, and only begun using it to fight crime after he'd realized that it could also control them. He'd never anticipated other uses for it until the Argonian occupation had forced him to work closely with Spider-Man, and he realized that Spider-Man's spider-trackers, little transmitters he stuck to people or things in order to track them down using his spider-sense, worked on the same principle. Both the spider-trackers and his helmet used electronic signals to mimic the effects of anthropod pheromones. With only a few tweaks, Hank could probably use the helmet to communicate with Spider-Man as easily as he could with an insect, though spiders not having a hive or colony instinct meant that he wouldn't be able to control their behavior with it. That wasn't on the agenda for today, though. Today, all he needed to do was send a signal to the spider trackers Spider-Man had attached to the detonators at Madison Square Garden to remote trigger the bombs. He was, Spider-Man had told him cheerfully, way better than a timer. Hank glanced at his watch. The requisite 15 minutes since Jan and the others had left for One Police Plaza had passed. It was time. The helmet responded to his thought patterns, translating them into electrochemical impulses, so Hank closed his eyes and thought, explode. It was like sending a signal out into a void. The ants always answered, responding to him and transmitting his instructions amongst themselves. The spider trackers weren't alive, though, and couldn't answer back. Hank had no way of knowing whether they'd heard him, if the explosives had really gone off. He hoped so. This was the first real role he'd played in a field operation, and the success of Clint and Tony's rescue depended on it. What if it hadn't worked? If the charges hadn't gone off, Jan and Steve and the others would be walking into a death trap, filled with too many guards for them to ever overcome. He wasn't going to think about it, Hank decided. He was going to trust that his science had worked, and focus on something else. The echoing silence around him made the basement even lonelier than it usually was. Hank pulled the Ant-Man helmet off and laid it aside, smoothing one hand over the silver metal. Then he turned back to the never-ending project that was the Argonian autopsy reports. So much data, and none of it, save the venom composition, had proved to be of any real use. He was missing something. He knew it. There had to be something useful there. He knew there was. It made him want to bang his head against the table. He never missed things. He'd at least managed to solve the mystery of why the food Tony and Clint were given had no vitamin C or salt in it. Neither substance had been present in the Argonian's body, and both were irritants to it, for all the good that knowledge would do. Hank glared at his lab notes, resisting the urge to tear them up, or ball them up and throw them at the wall. Missing something, damn it. Missing something! What was it? He threw the notes down on his lab bench and ran his fingers through his hair, sighing. This wasn't helping. He couldn't think right when he was frustrated, and sitting still was making him feel twitchy. The other good thing about ants was that they were always nice and calming. Hank gave up trying to pretend to be calm and jumped to his feet, pacing the length of the room and back again. The salt and vitamin C were important. He knew that, even if he hadn't figured out how yet. Argonians didn't need to eat them, but neither substance would kill them, either. So why were they letting a valuable resource like their human scientists die slowly for want of them? Did they just not realize humans needed them? Surely not. If they knew English, they had to know that people needed vitamin C. They knew, and yet they were deliberately letting their captives die of scurvy. Why? Hank made another circuit of the room, listening to the dull sounds his footsteps made on the concrete floor. He stared blankly at his workbench as he paced, absently cataloging its contents. Helmet, disassembled spider tracker, Argonian tail barb, aquafortis, a rack of empty test tubes, homemade explosives, ready for use and stored as safely as possible, which wasn't very, batteries, hydrogen peroxide, Windex, Clorox. He'd stuck the last two next to one another on purpose, rolling his eyes defiantly at Jan. Ammonia and bleach. Both of them were poisonous on their own if ingested, but together they produced chlorine gas, the first deadly airborne toxin ever deployed in chemical warfare. It hadn't killed as many people as phosgene, but it was probably far more famous, not least because it could be made by combining two common household chemicals. Combining. Hank raced back to the lab bench and snatched his notes up again, frantically scanning them until he got to the data he'd put together on the Argonian's metabolism and central nervous system. Salt and citric acid alone would irritate them, make them sick. Together. Human cells in the human nervous system required sodium and citric acid to function properly. Argonians' bodies used different chemicals for those purposes. Heavy metals. Metals that would bond with chelating substances and become metabolically useless to them. Sodium and citric acid combined to form sodium ascorbate, which was a chelating substance. The Argonians were depriving their human prisoners of vitamin C and salt for the same reasons that humans, at least halfway intelligent humans, didn't try to wash something with ammonia and bleached-based products simultaneously, because vitamin C and salt together produced a deadly poison. A deadly poison that was colorless, odorless, and completely soluble in water. Hank forgot all about his worry over the rescue attempt. He had more important things to think about right now, like how much sodium he had on hand, and how much of the vitamin C he had stockpiled for when the scientists were rescued he would need to mix it with. He didn't know exactly how high a concentration of sodium ascorbate it would take to kill an Argonian, and it was always better, when in doubt, to err on the side of caution. After all, it might be deadly to Argonians, but it was harmless to humans. Deadly to their enemies, harmless to them. Easy to make. Hank started pacing again, a wide grin spreading across his face. It was the perfect weapon. Now he just had to get Steve to agree to it. As soon as Steve and Jan came back.